So we've been talking over the last few weeks in this series, Better, and we've been talking about how many of us, most of us, when we enter into a new year, a lot of times we may set goals or we may set New Year's resolutions, and typically it's all about self-improvement, right? All about how to make me better. And the question we said that a lot of times we'll enter into a new year asking is, what should I do about me? I mean, what should I do to help me get smarter, help me to get, thinner, help me to get a better job, make more income, get out of debt? How do I eat right? You know, how do I live right? All those kind of things. But it typically, and there's nothing wrong with those questions. I think they're great questions, and maybe we should all be asking those kind of questions. But most of the time, they're really kind of focused on us. It's kind of focused on what can I do to make me better. And so what we've said is that there may be a bigger and broader, maybe even a better question for us to ask as we go into 2016. And so instead of saying, what I need to do about me, we've been saying, what needs to be done around me? Instead of what needs to be done about me, what needs to be done around me? Like, what needs are out there? As you look at the world, as you look at your community, as you look at the nation, what needs do you see that you think, well, I could possibly meet that need? I can do something about that. What needs to be done around you? And then we've kind of said from the very first week, and you heard Heather talking about that a moment ago when she was singing a song, is we've been asking this question, kind of more of emotional, maybe a more spiritual question. And the question has been, what breaks your heart? What breaks your heart? What is that thing out there that, you know, all the needs and all the various things are flooding at you, but there's just one thing. Maybe it's a category, maybe it's a need, a cause, or a people group, but this one thing that you see, and man, when you see it, it just grabs you. It stops you. It grabs your heart, grabs your attention. You've got to know more about it. You listen to what's going on. You want to do research. What is that thing that breaks your heart? And we started a few weeks ago in the series, and we kind of put in that little handout that you get when you come in. On the tear-off part, we had asked the question, what breaks your heart? And we asked people to submit things that breaks their heart, simply because a lot of times if we feel something or decide something and we kind of keep it in, you know, there's a chance that it can get buried away with all the other things that we've got going on, as opposed to if we tell someone, if we write it down, maybe that's a step of movement to get us moving in that direction. So many people, so many of you wrote down things, you submitted them. And each week we've been getting them, I've been reading them and praying for those people that had asked, you know, this is what breaks my heart, I want to do something about it, praying that God would give you direction on how to do that. But I just want to read a few of those of people that said things about breaking their heart. Lisa said this, what breaks my heart, children who are born into homes where they feel unloved, uncared for, and are victims of physical and or emotional abuse and neglect. That breaks her heart. And so I'm praying that God gives her direction on what she can do to help children in those kind of situations. Stephanie kind of said the same thing, but she went on to say, I know I can make a difference. My goal is to volunteer more specifically with children in these types of atmospheres. So she's saying, this breaks my heart, and I really have a goal to get more involved, to volunteer in some places, some organizations that are geared to helping children in this kind of situation. Emmeline said this, I want to create or develop a work program for special needs adults. And then she put in parentheses, maybe children at our church. It's a great burden that she's got for special needs. And so wanting to do something there in that area. Another person said, God is breaking my heart for patients who are obese, have uncontrolled diabetes, hypertension, and high cholesterol, who do not know how to eat right, what to eat, how much to eat, what exercise to do, etc. I pray that God will use me to create a movement of epic change among this generation. I thought that was a great statement. God would use me to create a movement of epic change among this generation. Others wrote that things that broke their heart were elderly, homeless, human and sex trafficking, suicide awareness and prevention. These are just things that you guys said, these are things that are breaking my heart, and hopefully the fact that you wrote those down kind of creates a little momentum as you move forward. Here's what I really, really believe. I believe that God is going to use this series in many of your lives as a catalyst that gets you involved in trying to find answers and helping needs. And some of you are going to be involved in global issues that are out there. Some of you are going to be involved in trying to do something for some national problems. Some will be some social needs that you see maybe in your community. I mean, some of you, I really believe God is going to use to change the world. And I think that's God's desire. I think he wants to use, especially if you're a Christ follower, I think he wants to use you to make a difference and to change this world. And it should matter to you because we've talked about, you know, if you do enter into a year saying, I want to be a better person this year, I want to, you know, work on myself and make me a better version of me, here's what we've kind of said, and this kind of been the underlying theme of the entire series. We've said this: if you want to become a better person, do something to make the world a better place. So if you really are serious about, I want to be a better me, I want to become a better person, the best way I know to do that is by giving your life away, helping a need or a cause, to anything that'll make this world a better place. And you'll find as you give your life away, you will by default become a better person by being involved in those things. And I think it's at the heart of God. I think our minds would be blown at what God really wants to use us to accomplish. I'm talking about us collectively, and I'm talking about you as individuals. What God really wants to use us to accomplish, because the truth is, God, you know, God never planned for us to just take up space on this earth and just consume and consume and consume, to eat, breathe, and take up space and then die. He created us to make a difference. He created us to make a contribution into this world, to add life to this world, not just to take life from this world. And his heart is for us to give back, for us to get involved and find ways to give back of our lives. And as we do that, man, not only will we make a huge difference, even for eternity, I believe in some cases, but we will find ourselves becoming a better version of us in the process. If you really want to make the world a better place, do things. I mean, if you really want to become a better person, do things to make the world a better place. Now, maybe you've been here each week of the series, all 3 weeks so far, and you've been saying, you know what? You've engaged. I mean, man, you've been taking notes, you've been listening, but you would sit back today and go, Scott, honestly, I don't know what breaks my heart. And maybe this category you find yourself in is like, I've been praying, God, break my heart about that. And honestly, Scott, I don't know what breaks my heart. And that's okay. You know, here, the reality is our lives are so crazy. And life is so busy. Things are flying at us constantly, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with all of the things that are coming our way. And then we have all the distractions that are taking place in life as well, right? I mean, you think about that. I mean, you got the NFL playoffs going on, right? Super Bowl is next Sunday, so you got that distraction. Obviously, we were all distracted by the college playoffs. Somebody give me a roll tide. And so you've been, there you go, I like it. See, you've been asking, how come I haven't said anything about Alabama? There you go, I just said something, all right? So yeah, I mean, we've been distracted by those kinds of things, right? You got the economy with the, especially in this area with the oil business and the oil prices, you know, being what they are. And then, of course, you know, the new season of The Bachelor just started, and so many of you are wondering if Ben is really going to find love this time. So all of those things serve as distractions. And life is busy, life is crazy. And so we may find ourselves in a category of like, I don't really know. I mean, my life's so busy, I don't know what it is that breaks my heart. Or maybe you're in a category like this that says, I don't know what to do with what breaks my heart. I know what's breaking my heart. I've seen the need. I know what it is, but I don't know what to do with it. I mean, to really think about trying to tackle this need is like this huge mountain to try to climb. I mean, you know, to think about it and to think about what I would do and how to accomplish it, I mean, that would take like 15 hours of me thinking about it. I've got like 15 minutes in the carpool line, right? So it's like, I know what breaks my heart, but I don't know what to do about it. See, if you're in either one of those two categories, I'm so glad you're here today. Because today really is geared toward trying to help you if you're in one of these two categories. I don't know what breaks my heart, or I know what breaks my heart, but I don't know what to do. Today, hopefully, we will, you know, at least give you something that that you can take as a next step in that direction. We started the very first week of the series with a guy, looking at a guy from the Old Testament named Nehemiah. And Nehemiah was a Jewish man. He lived in Persia. He worked for the king of Persia. He was the cupbearer to the king, which basically meant he tasted everything that the king was going to be drinking. And if it was poison, the king would know because Nehemiah would die. And so the king wouldn't drink of it. But if it was not, Nehemiah was good and they could drink it. And so that was it was a cool job in the sense that you get to live in the palace, and every day that you made it back home at the end of the day, it was a good day. And so that was his job, basically. That's what his role was. And these men came in that had been to Judah, his homeland, and the home is a city, the capital city there of Jerusalem. And they gave him a report of his homeland. And it was very disturbing. It was very distressing to him. They said, Nehemiah, our homeland is in ruins. It's desolate. The capital city of Jerusalem has no walls around it. The walls have been torn down and the gates have been burned. It's defenseless. And the people there don't know what to do. It's a really, really hard situation. And it says that Nehemiah stepped away. He sat down and began to weep because he was so burdened by the condition of his homeland and the capital city of Jerusalem. He then goes and he talks to the king and he says, I'm going to ask the biggest favor anybody could ever ask. Will you give me a leave of absence indefinitely to go back and to help remedy the situation, to help build the walls? And the king actually grants him that. Not only does he grant him permission to go, but he also gives him materials, all kinds of materials, to accomplish the work. He also gives him an envoy, you know, to go with him, you know, and has letters from the king that if anyone questioned him or tried to do anything to harm him or stop him, there would be repercussions from the king. I mean, he had it all. And so he travels back and he goes and meets with the people there in the nation, in the capital city of Jerusalem. And he challenges them, we've got to do something about these walls. And we're going to pick that up. We're going to go back and look at Nehemiah today as we wrap up the series. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. Here's what he says. He looks at the people and he says, you see the trouble we're in. Jerusalem lies in ruins and its gates have been burned with fire. Come, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem and we will no longer be in disgrace. He says, look around. We're in trouble here. The city, we're in disgrace here. We've got to do something about this. We've got to rebuild these walls. Because here's what he knew about having walls around the city. He knew the walls of the city would provide certain things for the life there in the city. The walls around the city, number one, would provide safety. He knew that if I can build these walls up, it will be a safe community. Right now, it's not safe. I mean, people are coming and going. Our enemies are coming and going. They're taking inventory of what's there inside the city. No one feels safe. No one's going to let their kids go out and play because they don't know who's in there. No one feels safe. So he knows if I put a wall around the city, the community will feel safe. It will be a safe community. But he also knew that the walls would provide a better community. In other words, that the people, because they didn't feel safe, they didn't have a sense of community among themselves. I mean, relationships were suffering, and he thought, listen, if we can put walls up, if we can provide safety, relationships can begin to grow again. Families can begin to flourish again. Life as a community can begin to develop again. But we've got to get these walls up because it's not safe right now, and there's no sense of community. But he also knew the third thing, the wall would provide a place to live. So right now, this place was not livable. This place was like an outlaw place, man. I mean, no, there's no governing authority. There was no sense of defense there. And so it was like, man, this is not a place. It's not livable. We can't expect families to want to live here because they don't know who their neighbors are. We've got to fix this. And a wall would fix this. And so he begins then to explain some of the things that that he has as part as coming to do this, some of the things the king has granted him with, and then he challenges them to help. And here's their response. Check this out. Verse 18, he says, I also told them about the gracious hand of my God on me and what the king had said to me. So he said, listen, God's been good. And listen, he got the king to say all these things, provide all these things. And it says, they replied, let us start rebuilding. So they began this good work. He said, the people there, they saw all the evidence of God. And they heard the challenge. They understood what was required. And they said, let's do this thing. Let's make it happen. I mean, think about the journey that Nehemiah has been on. It started with a broken heart. It started with a burden on his heart because the people, his people, were living in a place that was defenseless. And so that burden created an opportunity to go and ask permission from the king. The king grants permission. He travels there. He gives this speech before the people. The people rally and decide, we will do this thing. And it took 52 days, and they built the wall around the city. What government project do you know of that would take 52 days to accomplish, right? It was amazing. And when you understand the vastness of this wall, we're talking about a wall all the way around the city. How in the world did they accomplish this in 52 days? It's amazing. And we're going to kind of look at that a little bit. It's an amazing feat that took place. Now, when you look at the book of Nehemiah in the Old Testament, chapter 1 is this, you know, we're introduced to the hero, Nehemiah, and we begin to resonate with his broken heart over his city. I mean, that touches us. We resonate, our heart resonates with his. Chapter 2 is this inspiring speech, man, that he gives to the people. It's like, wow, I mean, if we lived there, we'd want to be a part of it, right? And then you get to chapter 3. And chapter 3 reads like the credits on an HGTV program or something. I mean, you got, Tommy used a hammer, and Larry, he brought a skill saw, and then Henry, he had a wheelbarrow. We carried bricks in. I mean, it's just going down through all the people and what they did. And the tendency is to go, okay, I don't know. I can't even pronounce these guys' names. I don't even want to spend time trying to read this thing. And the tendency to be to skip over that chapter. But I think that's a mistake, because in that chapter, I think we see something really interesting. And I think we see the answer to any of us that are sitting here today going, I don't know what breaks my heart, or I don't know what to do with what breaks my heart. I think we find the answer in chapter 3. And so I'm going to look at 2 or 3 verses here. I think we'll begin to see something. So in Nehemiah 3, starting in verse 28. It says, above the horse gate. Now, I've done extensive Hebrew work in my education, and I know, I mean, I can't expect you to understand Hebrew the way that I have with my education, but the horse gate means the gate that the horses came in through, okay? And so, it's education right there. It said, above the horse gate, the priests made repairs, each in front of his own house. Okay, so what you're going to begin to see here is that Nehemiah looked at the people who lived outside of the city, and he said, I need you guys to work on the big structures, like the gates and some of the other bigger structures, okay? But now for those who lived inside the city, he began looking at them like they're right here and said, each in front of his own house. Now, you might read that and go, okay, the point. Well, here's what he would do. He's walking down the streets, and he was like, you know, he's looking at the priest. He's like, hey, what do you do? They're like, I'm a priest. I mean, look at what I'm wearing, you know. It's like robe, headgear, sweet Birkenstocks. I'm a priest, you know. And he's like, okay, cool. I'm glad you're a priest. Now, here's what I need you to do. I need you to work on the wall that's in front of your home. Just work on the wall that's right there in front of your house. Don't worry about all the other stuff. Just work on that wall right there. But wait, Nehemiah, hold on. Time out. I don't really do walls. Like, I'm a priest, right? I mean, they didn't train me in the whole masonry stuff. I don't really build walls. He's like, yeah, I get it, I get it. And that's great. I appreciate that. But right now, we need you on that wall. We want you on that wall. Wait, that's a different story. But we need your help. We need you to be a part of this wall, this project. And so that's what he began doing. He didn't just segregate over, you know, the attorneys are over here, the priests are over here, the, you know, teachers are over here, business owners are over here. Y'all work on this project. No. He said, don't worry about all that. Don't worry about all that. And the point that he made is that your occupation, I don't want your occupation to influence your level of involvement. Their occupation didn't influence how involved they were. He said, listen, don't worry about what you're doing or what your job is. I want you to work on the wall in front of you. So he goes on. In verse 29, he says this. Next to them, next to the priest, Zadok, son of Immer, made repairs opposite his house. So Zadok's living on a corner. Nehemiah, I got a corner here. I got two sides. Which one do I work on? Well, your neighbor's done this one. Why don't you work on the opposite side? Got it. On it. Just work on what's in front of you. Next to him, Shemaiah, son of Shechaniah, the guard of the east gate, made repairs. He's saying, look, just work on this wall that's in front of you. Don't worry about the big picture. I got the big picture. You just work on this. Just work on this part. And we'll get it done. You just work on that. Work on it, what's in front of you. He goes on, last verse. He said in verse 30. Next to him, Hananiah, son of Shelemiah, and Hanun, the sixth son of Zaleph. See, you try these things. I'd like to bring you up here. Repaired another section. Next to them, Meshullam, son of Berechiah, made some repairs opposite his living quarters. So every one of them were just, you know, I'm not going to worry about what's happening on the other side of the city. I've got this responsibility right here in front of me. And as they continued to work on section by section, what was in front of them, the wall began to go up. 52 days, it was completed. Now, I don't know if Zadok or any of these guys, you know, had any kind of thought or aspiration about wall building. Who knows? I mean, Zadok could have been a guy that dreamed since he was a kid about building a wall someday. But chances are he probably didn't. I mean, who knows? I mean, the guy could have been a computer programmer, right? I mean, you know, it's like Nehemiah, I don't really do that. I build software to cause robots to build those walls, but I don't really do that. But here's what he said. Nehemiah went from person to person and said, listen, I understand this might not be what you normally do, but if you do this, we're going to get this thing taken care of. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but at Christmas time, you know, there have been some times that I stand out in the front yard and I'm like, do I really want to do lights? Do I really want to do this? You know, can I just throw some lights over in the bushes, maybe an inflatable Santa in the front door or something, just let that be it, right? Because you're thinking all the work that goes into putting all this stuff out. You know, you're sitting there thinking about it and you look to the neighbor to the right and they got lights all over the place, sidewalk and everything. You look across the streets like the Griswolds moved in, right? Got things hanging from the trees, got lights that are connected to the whole music thing, you know, and they're flashing and doing all kind of stuff. And I'm getting this vision of that, this, and me, you know, with nothing. People are going to drive down the street. Oh, look at that. Look, oh, Scrooge lives there. Look at that. Look at, right? And so you're like, oh, man, I don't want to. Maybe they do it better than I do. Can y'all come do my lights? That's what you want to say, right? But you know if you don't, it's going to be the one yard in that area that doesn't look right. And I can imagine as Nehemiah's walking down the street going, I need you to work on yours in front of your house, in front of your house. I can imagine people sitting there going, can one of these other guys work on mine? I mean, that guy got his wall up really quick. Can he come and just do mine as well? I mean, there was a part of you that I'm sure probably wanted that to be the case. And Nehemiah's like, listen, I understand that this might not normally be what you do or this might not normally be what you're involved in, but there's something bigger here. The vision and the dream is bigger than you. It's bigger than any one of us. And so if your neighbor on both sides are building their wall, you need to build your wall because the wall will be incomplete if you don't step in and do something. Build the wall. And see, basically they had the mindset that all of them began to have was basically this. When you don't When they didn't know where to work, they worked on what was in front of them. When they didn't know, you know, Nehemiah, we hear this big vision, we hear all these things we need to do, we don't really know what to do. We'll work on that in front of you. When you're done with that, then come to me. But right now, that's huge. That's important. Work on what is right in front of you. So let me ask you a question. What's in front of you? See, I know, sometimes we go, oh man, what breaks my heart? Well, that's a big question. I don't know. Okay, I'll figure that out. But, oh, shoot, what can I do with that? I don't even know. I don't have that kind of time. It's going to cost me. It's going to cost me a lot. I mean, we have all these things that kind of get muddied up in there. And every once in a while, we miss what's right in front of us because we're thinking about all these things. It's like, yep, but what's right in front of you? What's the need that's right there? You see, one of the things I love so much about the Bridge is that the Bridge is made up of people, many of you in this room, who said, you know what, I don't know. I don't know necessarily that I feel a certain thing or that I'm passionate about a certain thing. You know, I haven't evaluated if my gifts line up with this need or, you know, looked at my schedule and time commitments. No. They saw a need in front of them and they just jumped in. They just jumped in. You know, did it match up with who you are? No, well, not really, but it was a need. And they made the step to jump in and see what God has done since then. Is God has taken their initial step, that step to say, God, I'm here. I'm going to just work on what's in front of me. God has taken that, and he's caused them to be fully engaged in the ministry of the Bridge. They are bought in completely. Because here's what happened. Once they took that first step to just jump in, no matter where it was, God began to break their heart about leading people to fall more in love with Jesus Christ. God began to break their heart about hurting people, about imperfect people, people needing God's forgiveness, people needing God's grace. God began to break their heart. And so it might have started as just this first step, but it has grown. The engagement has grown. The involvement has grown. Because as they took that first step, God began to break their heart about the vision, about what needed to be done, what needed to happen. But it all started with saying, what's in front of me? And am I willing to meet the need that's in front of me? So the question comes back then, what's in front of you? See, I believe the church is similar to the walls around Jerusalem. See, the church provides certain things for our community, just like the walls did for Jerusalem. The church is where people find safety. Now, I don't mean, you know, running in the building and getting safe from something outside the building. I'm talking about a safe place to learn about a God who loves them. A safe place to learn about a God who's more willing to forgive them than many times they're willing to, you know, confess. A God that just is overwhelmed with love and grace and forgiveness. A safe place where they won't feel judged because of mistakes in their past. A safe place. See, I think that's what God wants the church to be, is that safe place for people. So that he can touch their lives. He can heal their broken heart. That's what God designed the church to be. And so many people I'm so thankful that God has created that mindset in the Bridge. And so many people have come in contact with the Bridge. And their life has been changed because they found a safe place where they can investigate who Jesus really is. There's a guy named Roderick Moore. He actually attended the Palladium campus. And you see his picture there. Roderick, he actually now has gotten a job in Austin, so he's been transferred over. And on his way out, he emailed us an email just saying thank you for the ministry of the Bridge. But really, when you hear what he says, it's got more to do with the volunteers the people who serve at the prison, it has to do with any of the staff members or pastors. And here's what he says in his email. He says, I grew up in the Methodist church, and this was the first church I attended in a really long time. From the moment I stepped on the campus to my last day, I felt so welcomed by the host team. If you're on the host team, oh man, you do so much. It's so much more than just speaking, shaking hands, holding doors open. You make such a difference. He said, I really enjoyed the band. They're amazing. They are. I've learned so much from the messages. They are always on point, funny, and useful to my everyday life. I appreciate how the staff is concerning things that you struggled with. I feel blessed to witness pastors admitting that they are human. I joined some great small groups. I will never forget being baptized in a swimming pool by you. He's talking about by Kenny Dean, who's the campus pastor at the Palladium. And he was baptized in a swimming pool in the neighborhood because the Palladium Theater won't let us put a baptistry in for some reason. He said, I actually thought that having water sprinkled on my head as a baby counted until you preached a sermon about baptism. Thanks for that. You guys made it easy for me to tithe as well. I finally signed up to serve a year as a greeter, which I really enjoyed, surprisingly, since I'm an introvert. Overall, I owe so much to the Bridge because I can honestly say that I've never grown so much as a person and as a Christ follower. I will come to a service whenever I'm in town. Sincerely, Roderick Moore. He found a safe place, and God changed his life as he began to investigate who this God really is. So the church provides a safe place for people, but the church also provides community. Just like with the walls, as soon as people understand that this is a safe place, relationships can flourish. And we're talking about not acquaintances, not, oh yeah, hey, buddy. I mean, so-and-so, yeah, okay, I don't really know you, but I see your face. No, we're talking about deep, meaningful relationships. Not a bunch of backbiting and gossiping and, you know, exclusiveness and all that kind of stuff, but deep, meaningful relationships. That's what the church was meant to be about. That people can connect on a deeper level with each other. Now, I'm about to do a shameless plug for small groups, okay? But it's important that I do this. Because what you discover in a small group is something so much bigger than being with a group of people and learning more about the Bible. That's a part of it, for sure. But you connect with people on such a deep level that they become more than just friends and acquaintances. They really, in some ways, become family. And see, when you're meeting, these groups meet outside of the walls of this place. They meet in homes throughout the week. And people go there and they begin to discover that there's a group of people here that I can open up to. They love me. They care about me. They'll be there for me when I need them. I don't know if you know this or not, but in kind of the old days, if somebody would go into the hospital or something like that, they'd call the pastor. You know, and so the whole mindset was, you know, the pastor was like the Superman of ministry, right? Okay, so somebody's sick, he goes flying in, cape and everything, and, you know, I take care of this, and I fly back out of there. And so you go around, you know, the pastors go around, there, these professional ministers that go around and meeting all these needs. You know, first of all, the church, the Bible never says that pastors are supposed to be doing that. The Bible really talks about that the church, the people, the body of the people are supposed to take care of each other. I mean, every week we have somewhere between 1,400 and 1,500 people that show up at both of our campuses, okay? I don't care how many people we hire, we can't meet all the needs of all those people. There's no way. But we have a way to meet your needs. And most of that happens in small group. Most of that happens is when you connect with a group of people on a deeper level than just an acquaintance. I want you to listen to Matt and Dana Dierman. Dana, they go to this campus, and Dana sent this email at the beginning of the year. Marshall Peterson, our student pastor, spoke on community, and she sent him this email and copied me on it right after his message. And here's what she said. Small groups have been revolutionary in my life. Matt was saved because of our small group. Our marriage was rescued because of our small group. We both got involved in missions because of our small group. They've been critical to us. We became less a small group and more a family. And now that our small group has gone on to separate small groups, we still do life together like the crazy family we are. We refer to one another like siblings, and our children know they have extra aunts and uncles, all because we were once in a small group. I couldn't have made it through my mom passing away without my small group family. I couldn't have dealt with having a major surgery recently without my small group stepping in to help. I know without a doubt that God has sent these special people to me to be supported and to support. These are not just good friends. These are family members. We've dealt with death, birth, spiritual struggles, addiction, marriage, stress, and issues in raising children. I can't imagine doing any of it without the added support and love of these special people. If there was a job available to be the small group ministry cheerleader, I would be more than qualified. I can testify for days about the amazing things that come from being in community with people who share your beliefs and have an interest in living out life honestly and intimately. I appreciate that you try to let folks in the church that aren't yet connected know about the blessing of small group living. Real, honest connection is a beautiful thing. I love that last line. Real, honest connection is a beautiful thing. That's what you should find. That level of community in the church. But the church can also provide life. The church should be an infusion of life. You know, now listen, God's the one that chose to do this, okay? If I had been doing this, I probably would have tried to do it a different way. But God, in His wisdom, decided that the way to transform a hurting and broken world is to use imperfect, messed up, got all kind of baggage people. I mean, that's a crazy notion to me, okay? But that's what He's done. And I'm telling you, this is going to sound kind of good or bad. The bridge perfectly embodies what I just said. I mean, we're made up of a bunch of imperfect people, messy, broken lives, and you're led by the chief of all of it, Pastor. But God's using you. God's using us to infuse life into this community, into this world. And because of when people bump into real people that don't claim to be anything other than who we are, but we've met and we are in a relation, an authentic relationship with a real loving God, it's life-changing. It's destiny-changing. It's eternity-changing. And we get so many emails time and time again of people's lives who have been changed because they come in contact, not with us, not with the preacher, but with you and the difference you've made in their life. Last email, Lucy Chow. Here's what Lucy said. Good morning. It was a pleasure talking to you at Newcomers. She came to a Newcomers. Unfortunately, my husband didn't believe that you said helping with the house chores was part of the information given, but it was worth a shot. Do whatever you got to do on that. I enjoyed learning about the church and the people around me. So to answer the question of why I came back to church, long story short, I remember seeing a post on a friend's Facebook that said, you either worry or you pray, but you can't do both. That stuck with me for a long time. I couldn't worry anymore. It drained the life out of me. I needed to pray, but how can I pray if I didn't know how? I've never been to a Christian church. I enjoyed coming the first time, and in all honesty, I wanted the service to last longer. I wanted to listen and learn more about Jesus and God. So that's what brought us back the second time. In addition to the reasons why I personally needed to find God, I wanted my kids to have faith and to believe in Him. They have a great time at Kid Jam and look forward to Sunday mornings, which makes me happy. I look forward to Sunday mornings as well. I'm excited to volunteer and be a part of the bridge. Here's a lady that said, I've never been to a Christian church until I came to the bridge. And now, not only has God changed my life, now do I not only have a relationship with Jesus, I want my kids to know that same relationship. And I'm plugging in, I'm serving, I'm volunteering. This is a lady whose life has been changed because they come in contact with a place like the bridge. See, Jesus went on to say, I am the way, I am the truth, I am the life. I am the light of the world. I've come to give you life and to give it to you abundantly and full. He said all of those things, and in him we find those things. But then he did something so amazing, kind of crazy. After he was crucified and then resurrected, he looked at his disciples, and this what he said to them actually carries on to all of the disciples from, you know, generations on, including all of us today who would call ourselves Jesus followers. He looked and he said, all right, here's the deal. It's your turn now. I know I told you I'm the light of the world, but guess what? Now you're the light of the world. See, now as you live for me, and I will work through you to make a difference, I will use you to transform this world. You now will become the light that leads people out of darkness to the light, to the grace and the love of Jesus Christ. Now see, that's an amazing thing that he's looked at us even today and said, you now, it's your turn. It's our turn to be that kind of light for people. And the very first, the second week of the series, we ask you, what would you want people at the end of your life to line up for and to thank you for? If you're a Christ follower here today, I can promise you that you would love to know that people would line up and say, thank you. I was in darkness, but you, the light of your life, led me to Jesus Christ, and my life, my eternity has been changed because of it. If you're a Christ follower here, I promise that's what you want. That's what you want to hear. And see, what this whole series is based on the mindset that you want to make a difference in this world. And I believe you do. I believe we all do. We don't want to just consume. We want to give back. And I believe that God has called us to do that very thing. See, here's the truth. If the church is the light of the world, which is what Jesus said, then it should be a part of your world. I mean, if the church is really the light of the world, then it should be a part of every one of our world. And I don't mean just a part like you come and sit down and you kind of take it all in and you leave and, you know, go out to eat and stuff like that. I'm talking about fully engaged. Because see, what we're trying to do, if it's true that we're the light of the world, we're trying to flip on a switch for people's lives. I mean, we're trying to flip on a switch so that people see the light spiritually. And we're inviting you to be a part of that. Come and help us. Flip on a switch so that people understand the relentless love of God. Flip on a switch so people can finally understand and see and be a part of the grace and forgiveness that helps them overcome their past. Flip on a switch so that they can find meaning and purpose in their life through a God who created them and knows them best. Flip on a switch so that they can have hope for their marriages, hope for their families. Flip on a switch so that they know their eternal destiny is secure and it's safe, and they can be confident in that. See, that's what we've been called to do. And if you're here today and you say, man, I don't know what breaks my heart, that's okay. Or, man, I don't know what to do with what breaks my heart, that's okay. But I just wanted you to know, we got a spot for you. We have a spot for you. And we want you, I'm convinced, just as important as the wall was to Jerusalem, God is looking at the bridge and saying, you are important to this community to make a difference. We have a spot for you. We've got areas, relational areas. Our whole thing is made up of small groups. We start from the babies. I mean, we got babies in small group all the way through adults. You say, well, what's the purpose of that? The babies know they're in small groups? Yes, of course they do. And I'm going too long, but let me tell you why I think that's important. We're trying to make it a part of their DNA from the time they are really small, to see the importance and the value of small group, being in community. I just got to brag for 1 second. Both of my boys are in college. I got two boys in college, and I've got a daughter that's in eighth grade. But my two boys in college, they play football, and this past fall, I was going over to one of their games. And I'm there, and these college students, like three or four or five of them at different times, come up to me and say, "Hey, you Mr. Rambo?" "Maybe." "Yeah. Are you Preston's dad?" "Yeah." "Hey, I just wanted you to know that I really enjoyed your sermon." "What? What are you talking about?" "Well, Preston has put together a small group, and we've been looking at the Playmaker series. And if you recall, that's a series we did back in the fall, and we had small group stuff that went along with it. We've been listening to your Playmaker series in our small group, and we've been talking through the questions that y'all provided for that. And we're really enjoying it. We're really glad he put the small group together." What did it do to me? I couldn't care less if they were listening to me preach. What it meant to me is that my son has seen and has experienced the value of community and small group. And he was willing to repeat that and to carry on that value in college. Do you think it convinced me that we need to still be in small groups? Absolutely it does. There's so many areas in our small group ministry where we need help. We need people plugging in and helping us with small group areas. Technical, we need people, you know, running sound, running. See? See what I deal with? That's what I work with right there. There's stress back there, right? I mean, we need more people back there. We need people, you know, if you know how to push buttons, if you're one of those people that are like, "Man, just give me a room by myself with buttons and I'm good." If that's you, we got a place for you. We got buttons for you. I mean, we need people with technical minds to help us in some of these areas. Social, we need, I just mentioned a moment ago about the greeters, the people that welcome people, how important you are. Man, we're always needing greeters. We're always needing people that would just welcome people and say, "Man, we're glad you're here." Any of the social aspects of who we are and what we do. Creative, we need people with creative mindsets. I don't know if you've noticed, but we try to do creative things around here. Okay, like when the X-Wing fighter was here, I mean, it wasn't like we asked Santa for it and the night before it showed up, okay? We really had people that built that, and they're constantly, these set changes that you see periodically with different messages, the series that we're doing, people are actually putting those together. We need people that are creative-minded. We have a spot for you. You can get plugged in. So what's the next step? I'm going to give it to you quickly. Next step, your communication card right there, this little handout that you get every week. On the inside, that little tear-off communication card, at the bottom down there, it says, "I want to get involved," and it's got different areas you can get involved. If you fill this out, check one of these areas and drop it in the red box, it doesn't mean that next week you're going to be doing this, okay? It means that we want to get that information to you. We want to make sure that you know what we're doing there so that you can figure out how you can be involved, okay? It doesn't automatically sign you up and you're done. But if you want more information, this communication card, fill it out, drop it in the red box, okay? Now, if you sit back and say, "I just wished I knew more about what happens behind the scenes in these areas," we got a place for you too. Next week is our volunteer, and it'll happen at the 9 o'clock service, it'll happen at the 11 o'clock service, and there will be a tour, there will be people walking around, and they'll go behind the scenes to every one of these environments. And they'll talk to someone there. The group will hear from someone in each of those areas about what takes place there and what needs are there and what kind of people they need to plug in. So if you ever thought, "Man, this is a big place, I don't know what I would do," this is a great opportunity to go see behind the scenes of where you might be able to plug in and get involved. If you want to be a part of that, communication card as well, you can see a place there to RSVP to be a part of volunteer next Sunday. This is an opportunity for you to do something that's right in front of you. And as you do that, I believe that God is going to reveal what He wants you to have a broken heart about, and He's going to give you clarity on what you need to do with that broken heart. But it's as you jump in and start working on what's right in front of you. You know what my hope and my prayer for this whole series has been? Is that we would commit to just saying just this thing right here. I'm going to make the rest of my life the best of my life. Regardless of what I've done at this point, regardless of what I've been involved in, from this point forward, the rest of my life, I want it to be the best. I want to give my life away so that I can make a difference and that God can use it. Change people's lives, change people's destinies, change people's eternities. And I hope and pray that that's what he does with you. Let's pray together, okay? Father, thank you so much for your plan, just how you use us, how you decided to use just broken people, messy people to change and transform a broken and messy world. We're humbled by that, but we're also honored to be used by you. God, I pray that you would continue to use us individually, but you would use us collectively together as the bridge to make a difference in this world. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for your grace. Thank you for forgiveness. Thank you for your willingness to use us. And we pray all these things in Jesus' name. Amen.